across from me, we got downtown Buffalo, New York. Some people say the armpit of America. I don't like that term. You know what I like? The beautiful Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo. 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 Buffalo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a what I can only describe as an unforeseen and insane edition of the Kyle Sellegi Variety Hour, because for the first time, not only on this podcast, but in my life, the first time in my life, and probably, frankly, the only time in my life, me and the boys are going to be discussing the city of Buffalo receiving a new professional sports team. It's insane. It's insanity. It's something, as I said, I never thought I'd be able to discuss in my lifetime, given Buffalo's current status as a city, as a market, all that. I never expected another professional sports team to ever come to Buffalo, and it took a global pandemic, and fans aren't even going to be able to see them, but they're here regardless. So we're going to discuss that. And also, this is a Bills podcast, so we're going to discuss Bills training camp, which I guess is happening soon. I guess it's not really, it's crazy. It has to be something really big in the world of professional sports for the fact that an NFL season is happening and training camp is starting soon to be completely overshadowed and for nobody to talk about that fact. But that's exactly what this piece of information was. The whole, as we'll talk about in a few minutes here, the whole Buffalo getting, at least temporarily, another sports team. So joining me to discuss, as I said, this unforeseen and insane news, first, it's Justin DeLauro. D-Lo, how are you?
I'm excited to talk some baseball here. Should be exciting.
Some Blue Jays baseball.
Some Blue Jays baseball.
And also here, it's McKenna Middlebrook. McKenna, what up, my guy?
I'm here to defend myself. Last week on the pod, you had Travis on, who seems like a very nice guy.
He's fine.
You said, you're like, I'm at a bachelor party, wiling out. And he said, who goes to a bachelor party at 12 p.m.? I'm going to defend myself by saying I was there from Friday until Monday. So I was on the second day of being at a bachelor party.
Right.
So I'm not really, I'm seem like a degenerate even more for being at a bachelor party during COVID, but, you know, it's my brother and my future brother-in-law's wedding, so I had to be there.
Right, and I'm sure you took necessary precautions and things like that.
Masks all around, social distancing, you know, yeah, we never shared any cigars or, you know, drinks or bottles. It was all, you know, very, you know, Cuomo would have been proud.
Right, exactly.
Model citizens. You should have been invited.
Yeah, did you invite Governor Cuomo?
We did, but he didn't get the...
didn't respond.
Yeah. Fun fact, inviting politicians to parties. I invited President Obama to my graduation party when I graduated from high school, and he sent me a letter back.
At this, whatchamacallit, at this bachelor's party, though, if Cuomo did come, would wings have been served or no?
I mean, we would have served them for him so he could, you know, see that they were actual food and, you know, they're filling to, you know, change his mind. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you never know what's going on in Albany. But that's enough politics, I think, for this podcast.
Right. I went to, last week, Monday. So not last week, a few days ago. But when this podcast comes out, it will be a week ago. I went to an inside restaurant for the first time since all of this has started, and it was completely against my will. It was with Travis. I wanted to eat on a patio. We got there, and they're like, it's 40 minutes for a patio, or you can just sit inside right now. And Travis was like, oh, okay, we're just going to sit inside. And I was like, no, I don't want COVID. But, you know, we're, what, X days deep now? I don't have symptoms, knock on wood. Maybe when this comes out, I will, but let's hope not. But, I went to 40 Thieves. And I ordered off the vegan menu because I'm a vegan now, or at least I was for that stretch of 30 minutes. I got like a tomato portabella stack, despite the fact that I strongly dislike raw tomatoes. I think they're disgusting. Like whenever I get a sandwich or a burger or something, I say no tomatoes. I can't do those raw tomato things. But like, in what world is that more substantive or more, like, more heavy, more of a food than chicken wings? Like, why can I get a tomato portobello stack with a beer, with a Stella Artois? Sorry, I'm British, so I just end, I naturally end words with A's with R's. Stella Artois, there it is. Why can I get a stupid tomato portobello stack, like, tomatoes and tomatoes and mushrooms on a salad and not chicken wings? I don't understand the logic there. But hey, I'm not gonna, as you said, McKenna, that's enough politics talk for today.
You know what, before we went to a bar in Lake Placid after we finished golfing on Saturday, and it was a rooftop bar, so it was no one was really there. It was great. But we ordered drinks, and I don't know if that law, I think that law was already in effect, and they didn't require us to order any food with it. We did, because it was like 4:30, we hadn't anything to eat yet, but
right.
Yeah, I don't think they required us to order. We were like, hey, can we get, you know, a few drinks, and then a few rounds of Irish car bombs, and then there we were. And they were like, yeah, it's fine, it's cool.
Jesus, you were going out.
Yeah, it was, we had the bachelor in question. He had 3 rounds of Irish car bombs against his will in 15 minutes.
That's a good strat.
Yeah, no, he was not feeling well after that, but it was a great time. Great time all around.
See, here's another thing. Now we're just talking about our weeks, but on Monday, after I went out to this bar, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to, you know, I'm in it to win it today. I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to get drunk. So then Travis... I was with Travis, obviously, on our way back to my house, he stopped and got a few Red Bulls, and we were going to do Jaeger bombs. So,
yes.
Yeah, love it. Or at least I thought I did. So it's hard. It's hard to organize a Jaeger bomb when you don't have the proper, like, cups. I don't have, like, plastic shot glasses. And So, like, my issue was I was dropping an actual shot glass into just like another glass that had a little Red Bull in it. So I would drop it and they wouldn't combine. Like the Jaeger just sat there. So I was like taking a sip of it, or I was doing the shot, obviously, because it's a shot, and I was just getting Red Bull, and I was like, oh, this is not good. So then I combined it and I tried to sip it, and I was like, I'm not gonna sip a Jaeger bomb. I'm not at rock bottom just yet. But Travis sat there all night sipping a Jaeger bomb, sipping Red Bull and Jaeger, and I was like, this is something else. This is not something I ever would think about doing.
That's the good thing with Irish car bombs. As soon as you put them in, doesn't matter the glass, it's going, and you gotta drink that quick or it'll curdle, which, you know, would be disgusting.
It does it in your stomach, though.
That's true. Imagine, you know, you want to drink that, like, you see the curdle, you can literally see it, like, curdling as you're, you know, if you put it in for, like, over 10 seconds, like, this is no good.
Speaking of curdling, the city of Buffalo now has,
It's a good transition.
That's my new bit, is amazing transitions that make complete sense. The city of Buffalo, after, 2 to 3 weeks, I guess, of just seeming like a desperate person just trying to coerce the Toronto Blue Jays into playing here. Finally, yesterday, Friday, it was confirmed that the Toronto Blue Jays will play the majority of their home 2020 schedule at Salen Field in beautiful downtown Buffalo. So just a little background here, just to kind of make the story more impactful, more meaningful. And if you're listening to this a year from now, which I would be the only one listening to this a year from now, and you completely forgot about this whole saga in Buffalo sports history, this can serve as a nice, a nice reflection, or a nice, journalism, a nice in-time piece of what was going on. So Toronto, the Blue Jays, applied, or they didn't apply, they just asked if they could play their games in Toronto this year. The Toronto Blue Jays, given the fact that they're based in Toronto, wanted to play their games in Toronto, but the Canadian government said, nah, we're not going to let teams come in and out without quarantining for 14 days. We're not going to let a team arrive here and leave 2 days later And we're not going to let you continue to go back and forth from America to here, because we've pretty much handled this COVID-19 pandemic, whereas America has no idea what they're doing. It's still a political issue. It's still a, there's some people who say it doesn't even exist. So that's why America's never going to get it under control, whereas these other countries that have gotten it under control acknowledge its existence and that it's a pretty bad thing. Anyway, so Canada said no to the Blue Jays, so the Blue Jays started looking. They started looking at other options. Buffalo was one of the first places they looked at. And Buffalo immediately, Mark Poloncarz came out, old friend of the podcast, Mayor Byron Brown came out and said, yes, we want the Blue Jays to play here. What do we have to do? And the Blue Jays said, oh, thanks, but, you know, we'll we'll get back to you. You know, the classic, I'll think about it. Give me some time. And then they went to Pittsburgh and asked Pittsburgh if they could share with the Pirates. Pennsylvania said no. They apparently went to Baltimore and asked if they could play with the Orioles or play at Camden Yard. And it looked like Maryland was going to say no. They apparently even asked Hartford, the Hartford Yard Goats, wonderful name, if they could use their stadium, a double-A stadium. And the whole time, Buffalo was just like, why? Like, this is ridiculous. What is going on? We're 90 minutes away. We have one of the nicest stadiums in AAA baseball. Sure, it's not MLB quality, and that's apparently that's what one of the holdups was the Blue Jays players wanted to play in an MLB quality stadium. They wanted MLB amenities. They wanted all the things that they're used to, whereas Buffalo just can't offer that because it's a AAA ballpark. But they wanted all these amenities. That's why they were looking at Pittsburgh and then Baltimore. And then when it came out that they were looking at Hartford, that's when it just got ridiculous. That's when it was just like, what? What? Why? Buffalo's closer, nicer ballpark. Doesn't make any sense. But then yesterday, as I said, Friday, July 24th, everything just fell into place, I guess. It all just made sense. The only plausible outcome throughout this entire thing, the only thing that really made sense from the beginning, was Buffalo, and that's what the Blue Jays landed on, formally announcing that the Toronto Blue Jays will be playing 28 to 26, I guess, games in Buffalo this year. Granted, fans aren't going to be able to go to the games or formally, you know, buy a ticket, sit down in the games, given that it's a global pandemic, but there's areas around the stadium that people are going to go and watch the game. That's just going to happen. They can try to block off as many points of view as they want, but there's going to be a few people who manage to watch a game. I'm going to try to, because I know this is kind of crazy. There aren't many Blue Jays fans in Buffalo, but I have been a Blue Jays fan for, you know, I'm not going to say that. I have been a Blue Jays fan adjacent for my entire life. I've never really been big into baseball, but if you were to ask me at any point in the last, I'm 22, so, you know, any time I could talk, so like last 20 years, no, I'm giving myself too much credit from when I was young knowing what baseball was. You know, the majority of my life, if you were to ask me what my favorite baseball team was, I would say Toronto, just because my dad's been a Toronto Blue Jays fan his entire life, or at least since they've been in existence. So I've always been a Blue Jays fan adjacent. So now the Blue Jays are playing in Buffalo. Again, took a global pandemic for Buffalo to get a baseball team, and no fans are going to be able to see it. It's like, you know, if a tree falls in the woods, is anyone around to hear it? If an MLB team plays in Buffalo, but no one's there to see it, do they actually play in Buffalo? The Blue Jays would like to say no. They're still going by the Toronto Blue Jays. Whatever. I think they're going to, if you ask me today, like, what's going to come out of this, ultimately, I'm going to say nothing. Like, Toronto next year is going to pretend like they didn't even spend a season in Buffalo. They're not even going to acknowledge that it ever happened. But Buffalo fans, obviously, have kind of taken this and run with it, because Buffalo technically has its own MLB team right now. They're calling them the Buffalo Blue Jays. It's all over Twitter. Jays Mafia. 26 Shirts is selling a
not looking shirt,
not so good looking logo, but you know, appreciate the thought, appreciate the effort. It's a good idea, but I'm gonna hold off until I buy any Buffalo Blue Jays merch. But just the thought of Buffalo, for the first time in 100 years, now hosting its own MLB team. Granted, it's only for 20 some odd games, and no one's going to be able to see it. And the circumstances that led to this are far from ideal, just catastrophic, you know, a tragedy, what led this what led to this thing actually happening, what led to this situation rearing its head. But here we are. It's 2020, and there is an MLB team calling Buffalo home. So, D'Lo, do you have any thoughts about the Buffalo Blue Jays?
I mean, it's exciting. I mean, there's going to be this level of civic pride that people have that an MLB team is here. There's going to be an older generation that remembers in the early 90s when the team was trying to get an MLB team going along. They ultimately lost out to Florida and Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of exciting that there will be, you know, Major League Baseball played at Salem Field. I had to go through every name that it's been since I've been alive to get to Salem Field.
Coca-Cola Field?
I almost call it Pilot Field, Coca-Cola Field, North America Field. It's been some other stuff. But
Duntire, yeah.
Duntire, yes. But it's kind of exciting. I mean, the thing that's you know, disappointing is that you don't get to see it. I think if somehow, like, there was something crazy and you could have fans, like, people would just sell that place out instantly. Like, even, like, non-baseball fans, I think, would just be like, this is a really cool thing for Buffalo, and it would be a nifty thing. I mean, I guess what's going to be nice is, on TV, the stadium's going to be on display.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a big story. It's going to be something that, if the Blue Jays do really well, and if the Blue Jays do qualify for the expanded playoffs, that Buffalo is going to be in a postseason, which doesn't always happen downtown. So,
oof. Nice dig there at the Sabres.
I don't know. I mean, we haven't had a home playoff game in a while in Orchard Park either, but at least
anywhere.
at least like 1995, I think, was the last time. At least the Bills, you know, made the playoffs somewhere last year. But nevertheless, you know, it'd be nice to see the buys. And I think what's also a really nice thing, too, is fans have been watching the Toronto Blue Jays prospects for several years. You know, we've known about Guerrero and Biggio and Bichette, Pearson. So I think it's going to be really cool to see them as major league players.
Yeah, before I go to you, McKenna, I just want to jump in here again. sorry, I've talked a lot, but I have a lot to say about the Buffalo Blue Jays. I'm very excited. But D'Lo, you bring up a good point about if fans were allowed in that stadium, they would sell it out. Because I don't want to say Buffalo's a good baseball town. I just think Buffalo is a great, great sports town. When you give Buffalo a sport that, if you give them something to support, a sport, they will support it. They will come out and show so much pride. Like the Bills, obviously, they've shown so much love to throughout their entire existence. I mean, they were bad. They didn't make the playoffs for a 17-year stretch, but obviously fans still crowded that stadium every week. The Sabres have been piss poor for a decade now, and fans still support them. They still have that passion. Looking at other sports, the UB Bulls, the basketball team, when they were good for a few years there, that stretch, fans were going to their games, despite the fact that UB, historically, a very bad sports school. But when their basketball team got going, Buffalo took interest. The UB Bulls football team, when they had Tyree Jackson, Anthony Johnson, and they contended for a MAC championship. I think they lost in the MAC championship game, but they were undefeated for a while there. They were kind of getting, like, ranked buzz. I don't think they were ever ranked, but there was that buzz that potentially, if they kept winning, they could actually end up being a top 25 school. Fans were showing up to their games. They were tailgating. When you give Buffalo a sport to support, they're going to support it. And again, that goes to baseball. As I said, I wouldn't call Buffalo a baseball city necessarily, but their ear is to the ground. Their ears are to the ground. I don't care if it's singular, plural, whatever. But Buffalo knows baseball. They're at least in tune with baseball. Looking back a few years ago, I remember Jose Reyes did a stretch in Buffalo, a rehab stretch. Fans crowded the stadium. I think that stadium was sold out every game Jose Reyes was here. Jose Bautista, when he did a rehab stint here, that stadium was sold out. Vlad Guerrero, last year or 2 years ago. Again, he was someone who had never played an MLB game. He just had a lot of hype around him. Fans sold out the stadium. Granted, that's a lot of Toronto fans who came down to watch Vlad Guerrero play. But still, that stadium was sold out when a good baseball prospect played in Buffalo. So when there is some hype surrounding a sport in Buffalo, fans are going to go and support it, which that's going to lead me to another argument I'm going to have here in a few minutes about this potentially becoming something more than just Buffalo's temporary stint in Major League Baseball. I doubt it'll ever become anything more, but we're going to talk about that regardless. But before I do that, McKenna, what are your thoughts on the Buffalo Blue Jays?
Well, everyone who's talked to me before about sports, my opinion on baseball is that it is firmly whack.
Yeah, it kind of sucks.
I hate watching baseball. I've never understood the hype around it. It's no longer America's pastime. There, I said it, you cowards. It's football. It's football. It's the NFL. It is America's game because it's essentially exclusively played here in the States. The NFL Europe flopped, and there are a few other like little European leagues. Like I know in Finland, there's like a semi-pro league there. I think baseball is whack. I think it would be indicative of sort of how people have perceived Buffalo, that it's on the decline, that they get a, you know, in the next few years, they get an MLB team somehow, while MLB is on the decline compared to football, soccer, even hockey and basketball. So I don't think it will happen. You know, I don't think there is a reason for the MLB to put a team in Buffalo, because while I agree it's a great sports city regardless, you're hitting right like the nail on the head there. I don't think they ever would. I don't think they necessarily should. You know, when was the last expansion? What two teams got it? It was the Rockies in Denver and
Marlins
in Miami, right?
Yeah. Was that the last expansion round?
No, it was 98.
Or the Rays.
98. It was Tampa Bay and Arizona.
Yes, the D-backs.
Both that one's a little whack too. Like, I don't want, like, you know, you really. It's in, so where are they located? Are they in Phoenix? I assume they're called the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Phoenix sports are so weird. They're so spread out. Like the Coyotes don't play in Phoenix. I think the Diamondbacks play in Phoenix though.
But I think Arizona's I think that's a little whack too. Like the Phoenix Suns are the only like, and I guess the Cardinals because they're one of the original NFL teams. I just don't think. It's gonna like, I don't think they're ever gonna get an MLB team. I think they should get an NBA team though. I think Buffalo has been crying out for an NBA team. They have the Braves, and I'm glad that the Clippers, you know, recognize where they come from, unlike other teams in the NBA.
Yeah, it was surreal seeing Kawhi Leonard in a Buffalo Braves jersey.
And it's a great looking uni too.
Oh, it's a beautiful jersey, yeah.
I just don't think nothing will come of this. I feel like I'm harsh on the buzz here, but I just...
No, you're probably right. I would say there's like a 99%, 0.9% chance you're right.
I think Buffalo would be better with another professional team. I would love to see another professional team. I'd love to see an NBA team there. I would love to see an MLS team there, because Buffalo is a young city, and, soccer is the sport of the future for America for the past, you know, couple of years now. I just don't think it'll ever happen. But if, say, the Blue Jays go on a great run and they win the World Series, I, as someone who lives Buffalo adjacent, am claiming that Buffalo won a, you know, major championship. I'll do it. I'll be, like, you know, it's like, dumb about it, but, you know, it's just for fun. But, yeah, it's nothing. It's, you know, they're going to be here for a few months. That's how long the MLB season's going to be. And then, you're right, as soon as they go back to Toronto, they're going to, you know, wash away. Like, oh, this never happened. We were never in Buffalo. So there's that. That's me on it. Just get rid of baseball in general. It's whack. Just, it's so long, so boring. Like, I was watching, the highlights were on this morning in SportsCenter. And it's like, how do you make this exciting?
It's difficult.
And like, and then you compare it to how they show highlights for the NFL, and you have the great gridiron music. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. When you are watching NFL highlights, they play the same music, and it's great, and you get so invested. But trying to get excited about baseball as a sport for me it's always been a challenge. I've tried many a times in my life to watch it. I'm like, oh, I'll be a Yankees fan. They're a really good team. You know, they're always winning. I you know, I live in Western New York, so I've seen the Bills struggle forever. So let's, you know.
I'll pick one good team.
Yeah. Let's watch the Yankees and see if they, you know, let's get some, like, championships under my belt, I guess. But that never really panned out either in the past couple of years. So baseball's whack. You know, they're not going to get a team, but they Buffalo should, though, get some sort of professional sports team. I would recommend an NBA team here when they do their next round of expansion, which will happen, I think, sooner rather than later. You know, I think Seattle should get a team soon as well. Seattle and Buffalo both getting teams again, I think that'd be great for the NBA, but we'll see.
I think, okay, there's a lot there. I think the MLS honestly could happen because Buffalo's apparently getting a USL team, and I just think soccer, if Buffalo does get a USL team, which it's supposed to if they build a 10,000-seat stadium, I think soccer's just going to explode here. I think you're going to see that passion that they have for football. Again, if the team is good right out of the gate, I think you're going to see that passion, or at least a small portion of that Bills fan base, take to soccer and kind of apply that same passion they have for the Bills to the soccer team, and that's something MLS takes notice of. You look at Sacramento Republic, FC Cincinnati, all these teams that have started in lower leagues who just work their way into MLS given their success and fan support. So I think MLS is a realistic possibility far, far down the road. NBA, I don't think so. I don't think Buffalo would support an NBA team. I think they would, but they would do so at the expense of the Sabres, because you have to choose at that point. You have to choose, am I going to a Bills game, am I going to a Sabres game, or am I going to a new Braves game? That's just, I think that's too much choice, and a lot of people in Buffalo, they're going to choose Bills, and then faced with Sabres or new NBA team, they'll either pick the Sabres, the NBA team's not going to make money, or vice versa.
The Buffalo is a city on nostalgia. We've discussed this before with the Sabres and the Bills. If Buffalo gets an NBA team and they call themselves the Braves, oh, I think they'd be sold out not every single night, but most nights they'd be sold out because it's nostalgia. That's, you know, it doesn't matter if the team's all that great. You know, Buffalo fans are used to having poor teams. So it's not like, oh, you know, we have this, you know, sort of washed up NBA team. We have a washed up NHL team. And we used to have a washed up NFL team for a little bit.
Which could happen again soon, given the salary cap. As I said, I think there's too much conflict there. I think there's conflict of choice for consumers. I just don't think, I mean, you're giving them three options, none of which are necessarily cheap. They're gonna have to sacrifice at least one of the teams, and it'll either be the Sabres or the Braves, and that's not gonna either. As I said, the Sabres are gonna start losing money, which they already are. Let's be honest, and then or the Braves just aren't gonna make money out of the gate, and then that's not a good proposition. But that's why I go back to the MLB, because there's nothing in summer. As I said, Buffalo is a great sports team. D'Lo looked this up before a great sports team. Buffalo is a great sports city. D'Lo looked this up before the podcast, and the Bisons, which, as I said before, you guys didn't hear it. It was before the podcast, or the listeners didn't hear it, I should say. But the Bisons, I feel like, have, like, no impact here. They really don't have a strong, like, they have a foothold, but it's not a strong foothold. Nobody really cares about the Bisons, I feel like, as a team. Yet they still average, like, the fourth highest amount of fans per game. They had, like, they drew 500,000 in 2018 or something throughout the entire season, which is insane for a team, or for a team that really doesn't have that much of an impact in the city. They're still drawing very strong AAA crowds, for, you know, as I said, for AAA standards. So that goes back to Buffalo being a good sports city. When there's a sport, especially in a time when there's no other professional sports going on, they're going to go and support it. And then that brings me back to MLB expansion. I think the MLB is going to expand sooner rather than later. As you said, McKenna, the NBA is probably going to expand, but I think the MLB sooner rather than later.
So?
There's been, what were you going to say?
I disagree. I think the MLB is going to stay where it's at because they're losing their foothold in the American market, really. And they're not doing that great of it expanding their reach outside of the USA and Japan. Like, they're two great markets to have. But when you look at the NBA, it's only getting more popular. I think it is in terms of revenue, you know, throughout the annual revenue, it's the second highest sport in the U.S., the second most popular sport in the U.S., while the MLB is slowly, you know, regressing. So I think NBA is going to expand first.
But, like, I could see the MLB, I think, to kind of counteract that, to kind of expand its reach, introduce itself to new markets, put teams in cities where they don't have a foothold now into potentially lucrative markets or markets where they can establish that foothold and expand the reach of the game. That's how you expand the reach of the game, as you put more teams. And I don't think the league itself is doing that poorly financially. As you said, McKenna, they're obviously not doing as well as the NBA or the NFL, but I think they're still doing fairly well financially. And there's been talk about expansion. I think a few years ago, Rob Manfred even listed off potential cities they would look at, like Vancouver, Charlotte, Nashville, all those cities, Vegas, Montreal, etc. But this is where Buffalo comes into play, and I would not be surprised at all if this was a part of Mark Poloncarz and Byron Brown's thinking and kind of or in trying to lure the Blue Jays here initially. When the MLB does open up its expansion bids in a few years, hypothetically assuming they do open up expansion bids, and you have cities like, you know, bigger markets, frankly, better cities, better road cities, at least more desirable cities like Montreal, Las Vegas, Charlotte, Nashville, Vancouver, Mexico City, London, maybe. When you have these cities or these ownership groups from these cities putting in bids, Buffalo's not going to match up to that whatsoever. But I mean, Buffalo, just market size-wise, offerings-wise, all that, they're not going to match up to that. But what Buffalo would have in that situation is the little nugget. Like, hey, do you remember a few years ago during a global pandemic when we dropped everything at a week's notice to make sure that one of your one homeless team had a home for the season, could actually play, could actually go on for an entire season? Remember when we helped you and we were flexible? And again, at a week's notice, we helped you do that. And also remember how passionate our fans were? Imagine, or remember how passionate Buffalo fans were at the idea of a baseball team coming to Buffalo, despite the fact that they couldn't even go to the games? There was still all that passion, all that excitement that Buffalo was getting a team. They have that. They have that in their back pocket now. And again, do I think it's ever going to happen? Probably not. I think, as I said, a 99.9% chance Buffalo never gets an MLB team. But if you ask me 3 or 4 weeks ago, will Buffalo ever get an MLB team? I would say absolutely not. 100% no, never going to happen. You ask me today, I would say probably not. I wouldn't put money on it, but I at least see a path for it now. I see a path where this could hypothetically happen. Do I think the path is ever going to be taken? Do I ever foresee it happening? Probably not. I can't talk. I've been talking too much. But again, there's a situation. There is a clear path for how it could happen. So, yeah. So to sum it up, Buffalo Blue Jays equals future MLB team.
yes, and the MLB is going to come back stronger than ever.
D'Lo, any wrap-up thoughts here on the Buffalo Blue Jays before we move on to our Bills topic?
I mean, I think we should just enjoy this summer for baseball fans. Just enjoy them having the Blue Jays here now, because I just...
Because it's never going to happen again.
Yeah, it's not going to happen again. I mean, there were some advantages to having a AAA team as well. I mean, yes, they're drawing 8,000 people for AAA, which is it's fifth overall in the International League and ninth overall last year in all of AAA baseball. So they're doing fairly well. But I remember back in the 90s when the Bisons were drawing 1 million fans for the season. Like it was a great atmosphere. And with a AAA club, you're probably not going to get priced out ever if you're a baseball fan to go see a game, which is one element of it. What kind of... In all expansion, what I think hinders all expansion is the expansion fee. What person's going to pony up hundreds of millions of dollars before even, deciding on the market? And you have Buffalo, which is not a massive market at all for, television. It'd be tough to say, all right, we're gonna put a foothold in Buffalo for another major league franchise.
Yeah, that's the thing just about Buffalo in general as a sports market is it's Buffalo, I don't think, is ever going to receive another professional sports team just because it's a high floor, low ceiling market. Whereas, I mean, that's why the NHL continues to have teams in Florida and Arizona, despite the fact that they don't make much money or they lose money. It's because they are high ceiling markets. If hockey ever hits there, they're going to be making so much money. Or just, in other sports. You see that all the time. These teams are kept in markets that don't necessarily support them with the idea of, but if it ever hits, we're going to be making so much money. Buffalo is the opposite of that. Buffalo is, all right, we're never going to lose money there probably, but we're not going to make as much as we could in a Miami or a Phoenix or a Vegas. We're just not going to make that amount of money potentially. Obviously, we would, you know, our floor is going to be higher than it would be in these other cities, but the ceiling doesn't match it whatsoever. So when you look at, you know, potentially buying a sports team in whatever sport, you're looking at that potential ceiling, at maximizing your profits. Buffalo's not a place where you're really going to maximize your profits. So
yeah, you're right. But I think to your point about talking about the MLS before we end this discussion, we talk about training camp. It's tickets aren't that much, really. I think the most expensive MLS ticket I've seen was like $150 in Toronto, and it's when the LA Galaxy were playing them and Zlatan Ibrahimovic was there. So obviously the price is going to be a little more expensive, but I think the average price I was seeing was like $75 per ticket. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, you're not going to lose a lot of money, but if the team succeeds, you have the potential for those few seasons to really rake in some revenue. Because once a team gets going in Buffalo, like, they're going to make money regardless. Like, the Pagulas have a really great chance of making a lot of money these next few years with the Bills, because they have the potential to be making really deep playoff runs, and more and more people will start joining, you know, Bills Mafia and jumping on the bandwagon, some might say.
Good discussion, guys. I think, does that wrap up Buffalo Blue Jays talk? It's cool, but don't get used to it.
It's going to be the summer. The Toronto Blue Jays will hope to forget.
And that's the thing. Like, I don't think people care about the Blue Jays. I think they just like the idea of having an MLB team here.
Yeah.
Like obviously, it's cool that Vlad Guerrero is going to play here. Bo Bichette's real good. Kevon Biggio or whatever. Like, it's cool. But granted, I think you could put any team here and people would be like, yes, baseball in Buffalo. Like, the fact that it's the Blue Jays really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, to a degree, but I think there's enough fans who follow these players up from AAA to the major leagues, true, that they get on board. So I think you'll see a healthy amount of people who will be into it for the actual team.
If they ever put out a jersey that says Buffalo and like instead of Toronto, I'm getting a Bo Bichette jersey, but they're never going to do that. They're never going to even acknowledge that they play in Buffalo.
You can order the AAA version of it.
I could. All right, I might just get one that says Blue Jays and just pretend that it's Buffalo. I'll have to use my imagination. So, moving on. The NFL season is happening, I guess. As I said at the top of the show, there really wasn't that much fanfare about the announcement yesterday because everybody was so hyped up about the Buffalo Blue Jays actually happening. So, there was really no fanfare about the announcement that an NFL season is happening, but I guess it's happening. Training camp is starting soon, and our own D'Lo has been running down what's going to happen at training camp, which is starting here in a few days, if not a few weeks, I don't know. I know players are now back in Orchard Park getting COVID tested before training camp picks up here. But D'Lo, as I said, he has been running down training camp with his series of articles, Buffalo Bills Training Camp Preview, exclusively on Bills Wire. He's a Bills Wire exclusive type of guy. So, D'Lo, I'll let you kick off training camp discussion here. Are there any position groups that stick out to you as interesting or any position battles that you're keeping an eye on here?
Well, in fairness first, I will say our editor, Nick Wotan, has written a few of the previews, so...
Gross.
I'll throw him.
Gross. Just take credit.
Enemy of the pod.
I'll take credit for all of them.
Yes.
I think it's going to be very interesting because without a preseason schedule, I think it's going to be very interesting looking at how the coaching staff is going to determine what is the bottom of this roster going to look like. Mm-hmm. You know, Sean McDermott has loved to talk about how he looks for players, you know, reserves who obviously have special teams experience, and trying to find those players with a limited number of actual padded practices is going to be an interesting thing. So I think a lot of veterans are going to get the benefit of the doubt to start the season as some of these rookies who might be battling undrafted free agents might, you know, at least put their foot in to be considered to be part of the roster, might be blocked out just because there's not a lot of time. So that could be a bit of a challenge. From a position group, I think the Bills wide receiver group is going to get very interesting. We know we're going to have Diggs, you know, you're going to have Cole Beasley, you know, you're going to have John Brown. And then beyond that, you know, Andre Roberts is probably going to hold a fourth wide receiver slash special team spot. But then it's going to be, do the Bills end up keeping who? Who's going to be the fifth and sixth wide receiver? If they keep six wide receivers, where does Robert Foster fit in? Where do we see Duke Williams, Ray McLeod, Isaiah McKenzie? There are guys with some experience. They drafted Gabriel Davis and Isaiah Hodgins. So that's going to be a really interesting group, I think, to watch among all of them. I mean, offensive line, whatever. They have their five starters back. Pretty much they're bringing back at least 10 starters on each side of the ball. It's, you know, defensively, it's not a big deal that Josh Norman's here just because he has the familiarity with McDermott's system. If it was somebody coming in cold who didn't know McDermott, I think that would make cornerback a little bit more of a challenging thing to follow. Mm-hmm. But with Norman's familiarity, I think pretty much you could almost say it's like a returning starter because he knows McDermott's defense so well. But I think wide receiver is going to be a very interesting spot because, you know, as much as, you know, you think, okay, the fourth wide receiver really doesn't get that much play. I mean, realistically, it just takes an injury for a guy to see substantial snaps. Mm-hmm. So that's something to consider as we move forward. It's going to be interesting to see to what degree and how quickly Stephon Diggs gets really in line with Josh Allen and how quickly they become comfortable with each other. You know, mm-hmm. even though they wouldn't necessarily play a lot in the preseason, at least having some live action would be nice rather than, you know, they've been working together in shorts, but it hasn't been live action in, you know, necessarily in pads. So I'd say definitely your wide receiver is going to be interesting. Running back will be interesting. Devin Singletary is obviously going to be the number one, but then to see how Zach Moss fits in will be a fun thing to look at. I think the duo is going to be really effective. I see the Bills using Singletary a lot early in games and then letting Moss just run downhill and just destroy people to close out games. So I think that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, but overall, with a limited time, it could be quite the cluster in week one without these guys really getting their timing down. This could be a really interesting land when we get into September.
This is I like the point you bring up about the wide receiver room because I didn't realize they had so many talented players there. Like Isaiah McKenzie, Bob Foster. Sorry, I really don't foresee scenarios where they make the roster. But Isaiah McKenzie opened up his own like barbecue pop-up like brand. I just followed him on Instagram. So, hey, he's planning for life after football with his own barbecue spot. So good for him. It looked good. Looked like good food. But honestly, and I could look back on this in 2 months and seem like the biggest idiot, just seem like somebody who has no idea what I'm talking about. But I really think this whole talk, and I've seen a lot of it, about Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen not having time to get on the same page, or Stephon Diggs not having time to acclimate to Buffalo, how that's going to be a big thing to watch. I think it's overblown. I really think it's overblown. Look, Stephon Diggs, and this happens every time. I mean, every big acquisition that happened this offseason, people are talking about it. Will they have time to get acclimated? Will they have time to learn the playbook? Blah, blah, blah. Look, these guys, these professional football players, have been playing football their entire lives at the earliest since their mid or at the latest since their mid to late teens. They've been playing football in some form, majority of them much longer than that. These guys know the game of football. And like, I love people saying like, oh, will he have time to learn the playbook? Look, you hear this every time a player goes to a new team. It's like the plays are the same anywhere you go. They're not the same. There's some slight variations. It's the verbiage. It's the verbiage, as players like to say. They like to say verbiage, but it's verbiage. Just what things are called are different. That's the real, the real thing that changes from team to team, from system to system. Like anywhere you go, though, a post route is a post route. A curl route is a curl route. A slant is a slant. Like Stephon Diggs has been running routes probably his entire life. He knows to an extent, or he knows, not to an extent, he knows how to run a route. He knows when he looks in a playbook, he knows what a play looks like. And like people are saying like, oh, will he have time to adjust to the playbook? I'm sure he got a playbook in March. I'm sure they sent him a playbook. I'm sure he's been reading it the entire time. I'm not scared at all about Stephon Diggs acclimating to the playbook or acclimating to the system, because these guys are smart. Football players are smart. They've been playing football their entire life. I think to an extent all of them can learn the system. Like, that's not an issue. Is, oh, he doesn't have time. He doesn't have preseason games to learn the system. He doesn't have, all the time in the world to learn the system. He'll figure it out. That's not an issue. He knows how to play football. He knows how to look at a playbook. That's not an issue. And I understand the argument of, the time acclimating with Josh Allen. I definitely see that. But again, Stephon Diggs has been playing football his entire life. Do you know how many quarterbacks he's played with? Like, this isn't... Obviously, it's going to be different because Josh Allen throws some inaccurate balls. He throws a hard ball, or a fastball, I should say. I remember Zay Jones one day in practice. Josh Allen came back from an injury, or when he came back from his shoulder injury and he started throwing again. Zay Jones, he caught a ball. He was just like, God damn, that's fast. Like, he hurt himself trying to catch a Josh Allen ball because... As I said, Josh Allen throws faster than most quarterbacks, given his arm strength. But that being said, I really don't think it's going to take Stephon Diggs that much time to acclimate, because, again, he's one of the best receivers in football. Stephon Diggs is very good. I don't think it's going to take him that much time to get on the same page with Josh Allen, because he's been doing this his entire life. It's just this whole argument that everyone makes every time. I don't want it to seem like I'm coming at you, D'Lo, because I'm not whatsoever. It's just people all the time say, like, oh, he doesn't have time to acclimate, or he doesn't have time to learn the system. It's like, these people aren't dumb. They're football players. They've been playing, or they've ran some variation of these plays millions of times throughout their entire life. They've looked at some variation of this play numerous times. They'll figure it out. It's fine. Going back to the receiver room, it's it's a crowded receiver room. As you said, Diggs, Beasley, Brown, and Roberts are locks. I would say Gabe Davis is a lock because he's what? He was a fifth round pick. I think he's probably a lock unless something crazy happens. But then that's what? How many players there are fighting for that last spot? Isaiah Hodgins, who was a draft pick. Isaiah McKenzie. Bob Foster, who they like. They like all those guys. Nick Easley. There's so many. Duke Williams. There's five guys fighting.
I forgot about Duke Williams.
Yeah, forgot about Duke Williams. A forgettable guy. But there are, what? I just named five players fighting for a roster spot that may not even exist. Like, they may not even decide to carry six receivers. I think multiple times last year, or throughout the past couple years, they've only dressed four or five receivers. They don't necessarily have to keep a sixth receiver if they don't want to. If they want to keep another corner, another D lineman, another offensive lineman. They like depth across either side of the trench there. But I think that's interesting to see who of those five guys, if they do decide to keep a sixth receiver, who is it going to be? I would put my money on Isaiah Hodgins just because I think he was kind of a late draft steal, and it sucks that that's probably going to be at the expense of Isaiah McKenzie or at Bob Foster, but I think that's what's going to happen. I also want to talk about special teams here for a little bit. I want to talk about the quarterback room, but before I do that, McKenna, do you have anything to say about this receiving core?
I think you're right on. I don't think Stephon Diggs is going to have trouble adjusting to the system because from what we know of Brian Daboll, he likes talking to his players a lot throughout the offseason.
So
you can only imagine that he's trying to talk to Stephon Diggs almost every other day, making sure that he understands what the offense looks like and what he really wants out of Stephon Diggs, which will be fine. You're right. These are smart players. They understand what a post route is. They understand protocol. They understand all. They've been doing it almost their entire lives. The biggest thing is the timing and being able to catch, a Josh Allen football, because he's a very different quarterback from Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins likes to dink and dunk. While we know Josh Allen is not afraid to put a little heat, on a ball. But other than that, like it's hard to not see him, not adjust, because he is such a talented player. He's a hungry player too. Like, he works very hard. We've seen that all offseason, whether it be, training, by himself with his like personal trainers or training with the team, you know, when they're doing down in Florida. So I don't think he's gonna have an issue adjusting to the team. But in, for the wide receivers, it's, you know, I think the first four are a lock. But I don't even know after that. I think it's gonna be Gabe Davis and Isaiah Hodgins. I think those are the two receivers who are gonna, like, you know, make the cut, because they are draft picks and they're different from other receivers that the Bills have. You know, they're a little bigger body threats, especially Isaiah Hodgins, who's like, what, 6'5"?
He's a big boy.
And, you know, he's younger than Duke Williams. He can, I think, Sean McDermott and Brian Dable can sort of mold him a little better into what they want him to be. He'll probably be a special teamer for a little bit, but can come on in certain circumstances and make a play. So I think in terms of wide receivers, it's a great group. It's good that the Bills have talent across the board. You know, for so many years, they were starved of talent at wide receiver, you know.
Now they have a very good receiving core.
Which is great, because, you know, think about a few years ago, it was Calvin Benjamin, Andre Holmes. Those were your two starters, and Zay Jones. Those were your three starting receivers. Like,
the elite.
That's not quality at all. So I'm glad that there's depth there. It's a good position to have depth, because you need skill players. You need players who can catch the ball. So I'm excited for it. I'm really excited to see, you know, I wasn't even thinking about that either. I was like, oh, you know, wide receivers sort of set. But now that we talk about it a little more, you don't, there's talent. You can make a case for a lot of these guys. And I think it will be at the expense of Isaiah McKenzie, who Brian Daboll loves, who we've talked about before on the podcast. He's a great gadget guy. He should get utilized a little more. But, yeah, I don't know. It's an exciting group to watch for sure.
I know this is a training camp preview, but there's really nothing to talk about defensively, just because for the most part that unit's returning. Obviously, Jordan Phillips isn't here anymore. Shaq Lawson isn't here, but I think they effectively replaced those guys with Vernon Butler, Mario Addison, Quentin Jefferson. There's definitely some intrigue across the defensive line. We'll see how that shakes out, where Quentin Jefferson ultimately slides in, whether it be at defensive tackle, at three tech, or at defensive end. We'll just have to wait and see. Their linebacker for the most part is the same. Lorenzo Alexander's gone, but he's going to be fighting with AJ, or it's going to be a fight between. I just implied that Lorenzo Alexander was going to be fighting for his job, but he's not playing. It's the battle's probably going to be AJ Klein versus Voshon Joseph, assuming he's good to go. So that'll be an interesting camp battle. See if Voshon Joseph can come back from a year of injury, a year where he didn't see the field at all, and kind of come in there and, you know, fight and try to take take the starting job from AJ Klein, who I think they're expecting to be the starter. But we'll see. Voshon Joseph's got a lot of talent, a lot of upside. We'll see if he can take advantage of this opportunity. And then the secondary, largely the same. The battle is Levi Wallace, EJ Gaines, or Josh Norman. And then, as you said, D'Lo, that's not really something to be concerned about, because all three of those guys have extreme familiarity with the system. Levi Wallace has been fine in a McDermott defense for the past couple of years. EJ Gaines was very good in a McDermott defense for a year. And then Josh Norman was elite in a McDermott defense for an extended period of time. So we will see, out of those three, who can kind of grab a stranglehold of that job. My bold prediction, very bold prediction, is EJ Gaines.
Whoa.
I think, realistically, EJ Gaines could win that roster spot. And I said last year, I was kind of, again, on the EJ Gaines bandwagon. That sounded weird. EJ Gaines bandwagon in training camp last year, because he played well, but then he got injured again. And that's his thing. People say the best ability is availability. I don't know if I agree with that, but if EJ Gaines can be available, he might be the best option, just because he was very good in 2017, very good opposite Tre'Davious White, left, didn't really do well in Cleveland, got injured, came back, got injured, now he's back again. We'll see if he can stay healthy. I think there's a possibility he supplants Levi Wallace and Josh Norman. As you said, D'Lo, that's not really a concern of mine, just because I think they have a good option regardless of who wins. I'm not really concerned about that secondary cornerback spot. Offensively, the line should be exactly the same. The offensive line, the wide receiver core we talked about. Now let's talk about the quarterback room. D'Lo, there's currently four guys in there. we got Josh Allen, Matt Barkley, Davis Webb, Jake Fromm. How many quarterbacks do they carry? And if it's not four, who's the odd man out?
I mean, I think you're going to see... Does Davis Webb still have practice squad availability? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know.
I could see them putting Fromm and Davis Webb on the practice squad. I don't know who would claim Fromm.
No one
if he
point.
If he sat around until the fifth round in the NFL draft. I don't know who would reach out unless there was a big injury that they'd want to, you know, poach him from the practice squad. But, I mean, I could see the Bills going in with two, with Barkley and Allen and the other two, Webb and Fromm, being part of the practice squad. Actually, you don't even really need two quarterbacks on the practice squad. So if they feel like Fromm's done enough, I think you'd see Webb be released.
Yeah, I think Webb's the odd man out there because, as you said, they drafted a quarterback. Like, they drafted Jake Fromm in the first round. Or first round. Could you imagine? No, they drafted him in the fifth round. And that's an interesting idea about putting him on the practice squad. Because if you would have asked me when they drafted him, is there any way he goes on the practice squad? I would have said no, there'd be a team that would snatch him up when he goes through waivers. But given the offseason he had, I don't know if any team would touch him. I think the Bills could probably, if they want to, could get away with putting him on the practice squad and just letting him run scout team for a year. And then if a team does try to poach him like mid-season, they'd put him on the active roster. But they do not necessarily have to keep Jake Fromm on the active roster. Just because I really don't think, again, given his offseason, given the controversy, I really don't think you'd see a team take a risk on him. I think the Bills might get away with putting... I just spat on my microphone. Nice. I think the Bills would get away with putting him on the practice squad. McKenna, anything to say there?
Yeah. It's a weird room. You know, you have your starter, Josh Allen, and then you have Matt Barkley. And after that, you know, it's a toss-up, really. You have make a great point about have Jake Fromm, the offseason that he had, the controversy that surrounded him, and... You know, the Bills really don't like having any sort of controversy surround their team, especially when it's such a potent time for controversy and people are looking into every single, you know, controversial thing you say. So I wouldn't be surprised if they just outright cut him and have, I can't even remember the other quarterback's name.
Davis Webb?
Yes, who is a little more comparable to Josh Allen if I'm, like... I know very little about him.
He doesn't have the athleticism, but he has the frame.
You know, which is sort of what you want in one of your backups. You want at least one of them to be able to step in and, you know, do similar sort of things, which Jake Fromm doesn't do, and Matt, as we see, Matt Barkley does not do at all. So having someone sort of similar would be better than having another, you know, Matt Barkley who's more of a, you know, traditional, quote-unquote, like, quarterback.
So we just talked about potentially putting Jake Fromm on the practice squad, but do you guys see a scenario, any scenario, where in training camp, Jake Fromm shows enough to supplant Matt Barkley and potentially cost Matt Barkley a roster spot? Or do you think, given this COVID-shortened preseason workout thing here, that Matt Barkley's job is kind of secure?
Oh, I think they would be way more comfortable with Barkley. They learned the lesson from a couple years ago. When they ended up trading AJ McCarron, and then they had no one with true experience, and then they had to thrust Allen into the starter role a little earlier than anticipated. Mm-hmm. I think it would be an absolute train wreck if they just said, you know, shipped off Barkley. Barkley's in the last year of his contract. It gives them a year to see if Fromm can you know grow into that role. But I think, you know, I think if you have this team, and then you handed over the keys to Fromm. If Allen were to get injured, I think you would be taking a playoff team off the field.
Yeah.
Boom.
No, you're right. I mean, because Jake Fromm, not very good. Like I remember people have been tweeting this article, especially after the Jake Fromm controversy surfaced again. right around the time the Drew Brees controversy surfaced. But I think it was Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl organizer or whatever, said something along the lines of he sees some Drew Brees in Jake Fromm, which, again, given their respective controversies, that's hilarious. But on the field... you know, he saw some of Drew Brees, like, qualities in Jake Fromm. I don't know if I agree with that. Like, obviously, you look at Drew Brees, I wouldn't say he's an NFL athlete, but he is. I mean, fuck if I know. But Jake Fromm.
He's not like the modern NFL quarterback athlete that you think of. You know, the Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes.
He's just not an NFL athlete. He's just, like, I remember being in the media room. Humble brag. That's my new thing. I've been doing it all along, but more recently in recent weeks. Humble brag. I worked for the Bills in 2018. I remember being in the media room and listening to a conversation between two media members, one of which was Vic Carucci, very respected, a guy I grew to respect while working for the Bills. But I remember somebody was saying, a media guy was saying how he wanted Josh Rosen over Josh Allen for the Bills. And Vic Carucci said, no. Josh Rosen, not an NFL athlete, just not an NFL athlete. And that's something I didn't consider. You know, you look at Rosen, he can make throws other guys can't make, whatever. But Josh Rosen, like, looking at it, just not an NFL quality athlete, just not a guy you would expect to be an NFL quarterback. And that's kind of what I get in Jake Fromm. Being a coach on the field, being smart, knowing where to go with the ball, that's all well and good. But when your arm doesn't match your brain, I guess. I'm not even saying he has a good brain after whatever, but after a Hizzle controversy. But when the arm or when the talent doesn't match the football IQ, there's just not a lot there. There's just not much you can do. And it's unfortunate. I mean, Jake Fromm, from what we've seen from him at Georgia, smart football player. Football. Smart football. But
social brain. No good.
Yeah, doesn't have the NFL traits, I guess. Doesn't have the NFL athletic traits. It's kind of the same thing with Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew, galvanizing leader, smart guy. Again, knows what to do with the football. Fine on his feet. He just doesn't have the NFL quality athletic like traits. He doesn't have a very good arm. He doesn't have the athletic traits or the talent that makes me think he can be a long-term NFL starting quarterback. Jake Fromm, again, on-field intelligence looks all well and good. I mean, people have called him a coach on the field, I guess, but I just don't think he has that NFL-quality talent. So I'm at the point where I would not be, like, if they cut him, if they tried to put him on the practice squad, I really wouldn't be all that sad. Like, I think people would freak out. I think people would be like, oh, of course, you'd see that, you know, that Bill Belichick meme that comes out anytime a player gets cut, a player with some name quality, it's him walking with the Stone Cold music in the background. You'd see that meme thrown around all the time. I'm sure the Patriots would even try to sign Jake Fromm, but, like, I wouldn't be heartbroken. I wouldn't be all that upset that they let Jake Fromm go, because I don't think he's going to be the one that got away. I just simply don't see that happening with Jake Fromm. I don't think he's the athlete. Don't think he has that that talent. Does anyone have anything else to say about the quarterback situation before we move on?
It's good to know that the Bills have a solid starter going into the season. It's nice not having a quarterback controversy when it comes to the starter. It's just a nice feeling to have, you know, due to recent years of, is it going to be, you know, who's going to start? Is it going to be Tyrod? Is it going to be Fitzpatrick? Is it going to be, you know, whoever it was? Because there's been a lot of average to bad quarterbacks.
We're an hour and 2 minutes in here, so we will continue. Last position group preview, I guess. It's not even a position. It's special teams.
I thought we were going to talk about tight ends, dog.
There's nothing to talk about.
Honestly, I disagree. I think it's very interesting. There's a lot of talent there.
They're all white. They're all. I was gonna say they're all white. They're all right, but
I think it's interesting because there are a lot of no one's outside of maybe Dawson Knox. There's no clear cut number two.
Tyler Croft, they're paying him a lot.
But Tommy Bahama, our boy, I think I'm the only person who thinks this, but I think he can be really good in the NFL. I think he's a decent enough blocker, and he has decent hands. And again, it's just the preseason, so you can't put too much stock in it, but I am. He was open, and he didn't drop a ball on Dawson Knox, who has the athleticism, who can block, but has, you know, he struggles catching the ball, which is, you know, your goal as a tight end most of the time now in the NFL. So that's my two cents. Tommy Bahama all the way. Number two.
I mean, I think you described him perfectly. He's a decent blocker. He has decent hands. Like, I like Tommy Sweeney. I think he's a fine player, but I don't want to devote minutes talking about him on my podcast.
I just,
if he has a great season, I'm going to clip this up so much.
What were you going to say, D-Lo?
They restructured Kroft's contract. He's the number two. Yeah. He's, you know, $3.4 million guaranteed. He's the number two tight end. Lee Smith is going to make the roster because they like having a fullback tight end.
Gross.
Lee Smith, no. Boo.
Defensive tackle, whatever, playing tight end. And then who?
Do you guys remember last season where I was like, why is Lee Smith on the field for passing downs? And then the next game he caught a touchdown. Because I do. I think about that every day. I was like, are you kidding? Like, literally, we posted that like Tuesday and he caught. I was like, oh, they're listening. They know.
Are they going to carry four tight ends, or are they? Or is Tommy Sweeney gone?
Didn't they last year?
Yeah.
They must have.
Because Tommy Sweeney, I don't think the only game he played in was the Jets game.
Right. He dressed a few times, but like
he was inactive a lot, but it kind of flipped with Kroft.
How many receivers did they carry last year, though?
You know, Duke only played four games.
Because if I'm saying they're keeping six receivers, I really don't see them keeping four tight ends. Let me go to Bills PR and find their last. This is gonna take fucking forever, but let me find their last inactive sheet. I'm already to
well,
April.
Well, the Jets game is gonna be a train wreck.
You gotta go to week 16.
I'll find something better. Week 16. I found injury report. There we go. Nope, that's Jets. Damn. Boom, boom. Great air. All right, here's Buffalo versus New England. They had five receivers, three tight ends. Tyler Kroft, was he inactive?
He's probably injured.
Probably injured. You love to see it. But yeah, they dressed five receivers. It looks like throughout the majority of the season they dressed five receivers. They had more on the roster, I'd assume, though. I don't know. They might keep. They held at least six receivers last year. Yeah, they held six receivers and four tight ends. So, yeah, they're going to do that again this year. There we go. Tommy Sweeney's safe. All right, special teams talk. I want to talk about special teams. This is going to be quick because the Bills, they have, I think there's an 80-man roster entering training camp this year, and they're currently at 88, so they're going to have to make a few cuts in the coming days here. They'll probably be made before this podcast even comes out, but I want to discuss this anyway. The Bills currently have two kickers and two punters on their roster. D'Lo, what are the odds that they all survive this quick cut down to 80 here, that the Bills enter training camp with both two kickers and two punters?
You know, I wouldn't be shocked if it was a really good chance so that they could limit reps. I just feel like they would keep, you know, Tyler Bass in to limit the kicks that Hauschka would have to take in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Vedvik, same thing. Vedvik, who couldn't hit like a barn during week one against the Jets, is now in the punter competition against a guy who was 30th in net yards and 30th in average punt. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's weird.
Are they actually going to carry four?
I think they would carry four into the training camp.
That's stupid.
I think they would. I think it's the same reason why you're going to see four quarterbacks in the training camp. I would make Jake Fromm's arm fall off before keeping four. I mean, I don't know.
Look, special teams competitions are good to have, right? They're good to have. You like the idea of them. Okay, like, let's see if we can get something better there. It won't hurt us if we don't, but let's just see if we can get something better there. But when you need to cut eight players, like, immediately, that's the first position group I look at. Like, do I have a spare punter I can cut? Do I have a spare kicker I can cut? I don't think they're going to cut either Hauschka or Tyler Bass right now. I think that's I think that's a position group they're going to let unfold, given that they drafted Tyler Bass. And they don't just want to do Hauschka dirty, and they don't want to do Bass dirty. So they're going to let that happen. I could see them cutting Vedvik before this starts.
Me too. I think that's the most obvious cut there. Because, like as you said, you're not going to cut either Hauschka or Bass, because that would, you know, didn't they just sign Hauschka to, like, a two-year deal last season?
They did, but then he sucked.
Yeah. He was, you know, bad. But, you know, I'd rather have a kicker competition than, a punting competition, you know, going into your training camp.
I don't know, punt, pass, and kick competition.
Here's what I would do. If I were Heath Farwell, the special teams coach, I would call Steven Hauschka. I would also put on a black hoodie for this. I would FaceTime him. I would look as sketchy as possible. I would FaceTime Reed Ferguson, Steven Hauschka, and Tyler Bass. And I would say, meet me at random high school. We're determining this right now. So then I organize at this random high school at midnight. And they just do kick for kick from like 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. They just do a series of kicks. And whoever makes more is the one who doesn't get cut. If Steven Hauschka makes more, Tyler Bass is one of the eight cut. Or if Tyler Bass makes more, then Steven Hauschka is one of the eight cut. I just determined it for him. And then they do the same with Bohorquez and Vedvik. Just who has longer punts. There you go. I just figured it out for him.
I don't know. There are like fourth string depth guys. The way McDermott thinks, I think he would like to have two punters competing.
Yeah, he's wild like that.
I think he would not want Bohorquez to think that he's won the job outright without feeling like somebody's pushing him. I think you could knock off at least eight guys from the bottom of the roster easily.
I know we're kind of going overboard here, but I'm going to look at this roster and see. Do you have the roster pulled up?
I'm just looking at the Buffalo Bills depth chart on ESPN.
Okay.
So they got this guy, Brandon Walton.
What position does he play?
Exactly. Left tackle. He's gone.
Okay. Let me write this down. That is so bizarre because I followed this team. I've written about this team closely for 3 years, and you just told me a name I've never heard.
No idea.
I got another one for you.
What's his name?
Okay, so that one's Brandon Walton. He's a left tackle.
Okay, yeah, he's gone.
There's a guy, Markel Harrell. He's a guard.
Martrez?
It just says Markel, Marquel, Harrell. He's a guard.
Gone.
Okay.
Gone. Garrett
McGinn.
No
idea. Garrett McGinn. I know Garrett McGinn. He was here last year.
He was here.
He has, long hair or something.
Yeah,
he's a guard.
Either he or Victor Sulaco.
Victor Sulaco was also here last year.
I think
one
of those would go.
Okay.
I think Brian Cox Jr.
Oh, you don't think they want to give him a fair shake before he even gets a shot?
I think these guys on the depth of the defensive line are practice squad bound. I mean, there's too many defensive linemen. Like Mike Love.
He's gone.
I like Mike. I think Mike Love looked good in preseason last year, but there's too many bodies. Either he or Jonathan Woodard would be gone.
Jonathan Woodard. They're giving Mike Love a fair shot.
Yeah, they're going to give him But one of the... Yeah, let's say Woodard's gone. Delshawn Phillips.
Yeah, you're making these names up.
Hey.
And Mike Bell are both linebackers.
Mike Bell, he's the converted safety. I think they're going to give him a shot.
Do you think they will? Okay.
So Delshawn.
Delshawn Phillips.
How many are we at? Five?
One, two, three, four, five. Yeah, we're at five.
All right, Josh Thomas at safety.
Josh Thomas.
Yeah, he's gone.
Garrett Taylor, free safety.
Who are these people? Garrett Taylor?
And then I'm going to bump...
Nate Becker. He's on the roster,
either
right?
Nate Becker or, one of the depth wide receivers, Nick Easley.
He's gone.
Yeah.
He's been here for what? Nick has been here for two seasons, and he hasn't done anything. At this point, you can't give him another shot. He's obviously not worth being even on the practice squad anymore.
So there are eight players who they can get rid of before they have to sacrifice a special teams competition.
In the middle of August, we're going to be having a discussion about who a special teams battle in Buffalo. It's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, let's bold predictions. Who wins the jobs?
Bohorquez and Bass.
I'll go with the incumbents. It'll be Hauschka and Bohorquez.
I'm gonna go Vedvik and Bass. We all went different.
Perfect.
Yeah, I don't want to explain why though. I don't care. I simply don't care.
That's my explanation.
does that wrap up this week's podcast? We had some wonderful conversations. Guys, I don't know if you care, but there's a Buffalo Blue Jays game on here in like an hour and a half.
Everyone now knows I do could not care less about this. I would rather watch like conference level soccer in England, which is not professional. I'd rather watch that than watch any professional baseball.
Sorry to cut you off, McKenna, but I have an important announcement. I have chosen a new English football team.
Yes, what is it?
I said goodbye to West Ham. I was just a fan in name only. I hadn't watched a game in years. I couldn't name their roster. Fan in name only. My new team is Leeds United.
Boo.
Nope. McKenna, I'm currently reading a 500-page book about Leeds United.
they're just rivals to United. That's all. I really don't. I couldn't care less if you support
them. I know. Yeah, they're rivals of what were they called? Newton Heath or something?
Yes, Newton Heath was their original name.
Yeah, I only know that because they're mentioned multiple times and again this 500-page book I'm reading about Leeds United. But
why are you doing this? Why are you reading this book?
I'm trying to learn the history, man. I now know that Huddersfield Town almost relocated to Leeds.
Oh wow!
Because Leeds lost their league team after World War I. Because apparently they were paying players who were playing during the war or something, and they weren't supposed to. And then the FA was like, yo, did you do that? Can we, like, see some financial records? And Leeds City, which was the precursor team, they were like, nah, LOL, no, absolutely not.
The original Manchester City, some might say.
So then the FA suspended Leeds City, and they were like, oh, no, we didn't think this was going to happen. and then... A few years later, some guy tried to relocate Huddersfield Town, and Huddersfield was like, no, I kind of like my team. I kind of don't want it to go anywhere. So then that guy sold the team to the city of Huddersfield, I guess, or to the supporters, started Leeds United, and then Huddersfield, in an act of rage, hired the old Leeds City manager, who was Herbert Chapman, who went on to revolutionize football and won many championships with Huddersfield and Arsenal. So, and then died of pneumonia because he was watching an Arsenal third team game.
Wow, that was a great information dump.
Thank you.
That's a great recall, honestly.
I've been reading. So now you know the story of Herbert Chapman, who was suspended but then appealed it. So there you go. Leeds United, the new team. They have Marcelo Bielsa, who's a crazy person, who's their current
manager. Oh, yeah.
Jose Mourinho, but crazier. Marcelo Bielsa once said, if players weren't human, I would win every game.
what a legend.
Which is the greatest quote I've ever heard.
If players weren't human, I'd win every game. That's right, buddy.
Yeah, he's just a smart guy. And then they're owned by... someone, obviously.
I thought they were owned by the Niners.
They're owned by the guy who founded 11 Sports, 90%, and then like 10% the Niners. And apparently there's some talk that PSG is looking into buying a stake in Leeds United.
What?
Or the group that owns PSG.
Oh, the group that owns, yeah.
Is looking into purchasing a stake in Leeds United, which would be crazy if PSG was associated with Leeds United. If they tried to become like their own little version of Manchester City, which would be
disgusting.
Insane. But yeah, I think that wraps it up. That's my announcement. We had the big Hofbräuhaus announcement last week. Now we're just talking about soccer. So thank you guys for listening to this wonderful edition of the Kyle Slag Variety Hour. Make sure to follow BillsWire on Twitter at TheBillsWire, on Facebook at BillsWire. You can follow D'Lo on Twitter at
JDeLauro.
You can follow McKenna on Twitter at
McKenna Middle.
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Selegi, or you can find me somewhere outside Salem Field during a Buffalo Blue Jays game. And you know what's upsetting is that the stadium is named after the inferior Buffalo hot dog.
Yes, I agree.
Sure. D'Lo, do you have an opinion on Salem hot dogs versus Wardinsky hot dogs?
No, I eat both.
I eat both, but
man,
like,
the people.
Wardy's all the way, I guess. I just think Wardy's is the superior hot dog. Also, I wild it out on the 4th of July, did something I never thought I would do. I caramelized some onions, and I grilled some pineapple alongside my Wardinskis, and I had caramelized onions and grilled pineapple on a hot dog.
That sounds really good.
quite good. Would never expect it to be good, but it was. Any opinions on grilled hot dog talk?
This is the next 40 minutes. Us talking about hot dogs. It's a 2-hour podcast. Everyone, strap in.
I'll go for it. We're actually going to end it here. Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Buffalo. 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 I love Buffalo, New York!